See, I think... I think all the races in Halo look real good, except for the Forerunners.
Yeah. Especially since so much time is spent, like, building them up.
Talking about them,
and then
them,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, they're just kind of like... They're kind of like an elf if it got left in the sun for a really long time.
It's like you microwave a Stretch Armstrong and you get a Forerunner.
Yep.
Hey everybody, you're tuned in to Out of Dodge, a podcast hosted by us. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Shane.
And on this podcast, we like to talk about movies, video games, TV shows.
Today is it's going to be a weird one, folks.
Oh, yeah.
The long rumored, heavily anticipated Halo episode is finally here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to dive into all these crazy games. Halo Infinite came out recently. We played it. We loved it. And we're just going to kind of go through them all. Have a little fun time.
Yeah, and then we'll slightly talk about the new trailer for the Halo Paramount Plus show, which will exist maybe for a season. maybe two, but probably only two.
Start that save Halo 3 hashtag, guys.
Save the order. I mean, Halo. Should we talk? We need to talk about the beginning.
The very beginning.
Halo 1. Yep. Combat Evolved.
Coming out in 2001. A hard year to love.
but a hard year to forget. So, Halo. Combat Evolved. Which we'll probably just say Halo for now on. Because the whole name is so silly. But anyways... is an Xbox exclusive game coming out on just the Xbox, because that was what it was called. It wasn't some dumb, stupid name with a number in it.
Halo Combat Evolved, the first in the long-running and mostly successful Halo franchise, and it introduced us to a future where humanity was at war with the Covenant, which is a bunch of aliens hanging out together and trying to destroy us and also activate a bunch of super weapons, which would also destroy us. Whole thing with these guys.
It's a first-person shooter. All of these are all first-person shooters. Halo, for most of the games, is a pretty linear experience. With missions, with certain benchmarks and collectibles within each mission. And you kind of progress through the campaign. And there's, you know, various difficulties. As you do. As is a video game, right?
Yes.
You know, you're dropped into the heavy metal-plated boots of John 117, the Master Chief. And you're a green guy in kind of a biker helmet, and boy, do you just kill aliens for breakfast. You are joined by your constant companion and AI helper, Cortana, which if some of you own a PC, that's where they got the name from. So there you go. Help me out, Shane.
So the very first game... One thing I really like, so Halo 1, you open, you're on a big ship called the Pillar of Autumn. In the Covenant, the alien bad guys have found you, and the ship is immediately going down, and you have to, like, fight your way through it and try to find an escape pod, and it's hectic and insane, and then you launch the escape pod and you land, and guess what? It's a Halo ring. That's why it's called Halo. Kind of like a lush green world, but it's not a world because it's a giant ring full of death traps and also aliens.
So many aliens.
I really like that. It immediately puts you into this fucking firestorm of alien warfare.
It has this really interesting way of funneling you through this very claustrophobic, very combat-driven first level on the Pillar of Autumn, right? You're in this human ship, you know, and you're this big hulking guy. So everything, all the doorways are really small, all the ceilings are really high. It almost feels like Doom back in the day, right? You get to the end of the level. The next thing is this completely different playground to roam around in and to explore and to kill aliens in. You get introduced to driving mechanics, which you'll use throughout the game, which are not good. They've never been good. You get introduced to kind of like this buddy system where you will save Marines and they'll tag along with you as long as they live. because they do die and you really can't because you're the main character. You kind of get introduced to this whole new kind of world, obviously, right? Because you're in a new location. But I mean more like the technology and stuff like that, because the structure that you're on is more alien than the alien that you're familiar with. The Halo ring is this kind of ancient artifact from a precursor race of beings. And it feels very different than both, like, human structures and, like, Covenant structures. So, just based on a design aesthetic choice, mm-hmm. it's a really good, like, dichotomy of, like, breaking up the different levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. Keep going. No, you say your thing. I just talked a lot about some stupid shit.
I also really like the Forerunner structures and this, like, the giant buildings, like, the sweeping architecture. Mm-hmm. And the way that you travel through the first half of the game, where you're introduced to all these new elements and it's exciting and you're fighting waves of enemies, they do a really good job of that. I think any game that can kind of introduce you to an entire universe of crazy nonsense and still make you want more and still also be a functional game that you enjoy playing is impressive. And I think in that regard, Halo 1 succeeds very well. But let's talk about backtracking and also the library.
Fucking library. So, okay, real quick. So you know how I just praised the level design? Not necessarily like of the level, but of the design choices that the teams made. Bungie, you know, good guy developer Bungie, developed most of the games. And then 343 got the last three. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Hey, it worked
out. But the issue is, with the graphical limitations of just the time period for video games, 2001 was, games were not lookers back then, right? Everything was kind of gray and kind of like borderless, you know? It's really easy to get lost in these levels, especially in some of the Forerunner structures, which are the precursor alien race. And so when they were playtesting the game, they had people turning around and getting lost in the level. So they had to put arrows on the floor to direct people to where they had to go, which is not good level design because everything was just reused assets. It comes from the game being, you know, essentially completed in 8 months, which is pretty nuts, if you ask me. Nowadays, it takes, what? How long did it take to do Infinite? Like 5 years? 6 years?
Yeah,
like that?
I mean, well, it also got delayed because of the Waterworld stunt show. So.
Yes. Yeah. And also to cut back on the hardware limitations, they had to reuse not just full assets, but full levels. So for some levels, you would just progress from point A to point B, and then there would be another level where you would be, like, you know, doing things at point B, and then the level after that, you would be going from point B to point A again with just more enemies. Which is not great. It's not ideal. It happens more than once. It happens about 3 times, I think.
Maybe too many times, yeah.
In CE, there is one instance of it that was slightly different, which is at the end of the game, for the last level, you return to the Pillar of Autumn, and it's all burned out and infested with aliens, and, you know, there's a boss battle and everything. So it's slightly different on that end, but you are just retreading the same assets that you were before, which is understandable for the time. And I think the team was relatively small too.
Mm-hmm.
For all the shortcomings that the game had,
yeah,
it is this, like, you know, legendary pillar in the gaming industry, and it did a good job of, like, paving the way for other games and other developers to do crazier things and, yeah, to do just solid shooters, you know. I mean, it wasn't the first, but it's probably definitely the most well known of that time period.
We don't have to talk about the library.
I want to talk about the library. Okay. The library fucking,
yep,
sucks.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
You start.
So there's a part in the game. The second hardest thing that you have to do in Halo 1 Combat Evolved, the first Halo, the beginning, mm-hmm, is at the very, very end, you have to race to escape a bunch of explosions because the Halo ring is about to be dust. And driving is not great in Halo. I say that with love, kind of. It's a little difficult. And if you pause for even a fraction of a second or hit a single obstacle, you die. because the time runs out, so it's...
You have 5 minutes
It's so stressful.
To get from one end of the Pillar of Autumn to another, and you're driving on top, which you're like, oh, it's a spaceship, it should be smooth. Wrong, there's ramps. So many ramps, for no reason. Literally, they're like, we're just gonna make it, I don't know, cool? It's ass, it's horrible. And if you, I think you can fuck up once and still make it, but you and I did it about 5 times when we were playing through it together, and that was...
Yeah, it's rough.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have never been more happy to finish a game than to finish CE just on the last, like, literally the last 5 minutes of the game. That is the second hardest part of the entire experience.
But the hardest part is the library.
Okay, let's talk about the library. So, yeah. You get introduced to a new enemy halfway through the game called the Flood. And the Flood are really cool because they're these little parasites that can take over... existing enemies, and it just totally changes the way that you have learned how to fight in the game, right? It can take over Marines, it can take over the other aliens that you encounter.
Covenant.
It's just gross, nasty stuff.
Yeah.
And the library is lousy with them. So you're following this little robot the entire time who has to open doors for you, but he opens the doors really slowly. And then you're just getting swarmed by the Flood the entire
Hordes
time.
Hordes of the Flood.
Hordes, just like hundreds of them.
The shotgun is very much your friend.
Yes.
You know, you have to dodge, and sometimes you have to run under like a little balcony, and there's like tunnels sometimes, and they're just everywhere. They're unrelenting. Yeah. And they don't, I'm pretty sure they don't have weapons.
They do have weapons.
They do have weapons. I lied.
Some of them have rocket launchers. Some of them have shotguns. Some of them have swords. It's just fucked up.
Definitely not as good tactically as, you know, the Covenant is. But the fact that they just won't stop trying to murder you.
Yeah.
Is the worst.
Yeah, because the Covenant, which has, what, like elites, grunts, and jackals in the game, right?
Yes.
Brutes don't come until 2.
Correct.
They all take cover. They all, like, you know, will dodge and weave. And then sometimes, like... Like, grunts will run away from you if you kill all the, like, elite enemies, right? And the Flood will just charge you and swing their arms at you and beat you to a pulp, and it sucks.
They do not know surrender, they only know consume.
Yeah, yeah. Goddamn, the library is hard.
It's hard.
Especially on, like, heroic? Holy shit.
As a design thing, because it's, like, this huge, impossibly large structure with doors and shit, I kind of like... It's just maybe a little too difficult.
I agree a lot.
So yeah, that's Halo 1. Insane, but lovable. And you have to appreciate what it did, not only for Halo, because obviously it made Halo, but also for video games at large, because it inspired people to take bigger risks and get weirder. Because
they wanted to do the next Halo.
Which was Halo 2.
Which was Halo 2!
In 2004!
This had a lot of new additions to the series. It added multiplayer, like online multiplayer. It added a split campaign, so you could play, or you don't, you can't. You hold on. You're not given the option to. You're forced to play as an alien called the Arbiter, who is kind of dishonored, and so you have to fight with the Covenant and discover more secrets about what the Halo Ring is. It's cool. Introduces some new enemies in the Brutes.
Giant gorilla boys, yeah.
Big old gorilla boys who, like, freak out and will charge you and beat you to a pulp, as well as the Flood, who will do that.
Yeah, but we expect that from the Flood.
Yeah.
When the Brutes do it, I'm like, you guys know better. Come on. The settings are also a little more varied. You know, you have jungles, you have scary structures, you have Earth for a minute. That's fun. Good old Earth gets invaded. From a design standpoint, it's really cool. It's new Mombasa, right, in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They get fucked up a little bit, but we win in this one, not so much later. But they do a good job of varying the levels that you get to play in, because you get to play in so many different places, and the levels are different based on where you are, and the combat is different based on what's happening. And I think that's good. I think that's an improvement. You talked about the dual campaigns, which I like as a concept. In execution, it's not great because...
No, it kind of fucks with pacing.
Yeah, it does mess with the pacing. And also the Arbiter doesn't really feel any different than Master Chief, you know? So it just kind of feels like, okay, we're over here now.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they all just talk like... So that's the difference between Master Chief, who talks like, I'm Master Chief. I can't do it.
What are you doing? The Arbiter has a great voice, though.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Keith David, I think, is the guy. Yeah. What a great fucking voice. And then you're like, oh, well, how could I not like the Arbiter?
I love him.
But eventually, obviously, the Arbiter and John. Do we talk about the fact that his name's John?
Love yeah, it. John 117. Yeah.
They've become good friends after talking to a giant pile of goo called the Gravemind, who is kind of like...
A Flood intelligence.
Yeah, the Flood headquarters. And the Flood is like, hey, guys, we should stop the Covenant because they're bad. And John and the Arbiter are like, okay, we have to kill you too, though. And Gravemind's like, yeah, it's the next game.
They definitely go hard on the story and the lore within Halo 2, which they kind of touch on in Halo 1. They're like... The Forerunners. This isn't a natural formed cave. But they go hard in, like, politics and, like, military structure and, like, all this jazz within the Covenant. It's very interesting, but also kind of goofy. But in a way where I'm here for it, you know? Because I wouldn't be talking about it if I wasn't, you know? Do you like Halo 2's campaign?
I would say yeah. I think the ending is insane. So, the game kind of has no third act.
It's not the only one that doesn't have a third act. Looking at you, Halo 5.
Ooh, it doesn't even have a first or second act. there's a lot of fighting. You blow something up, I think, in Halo 2, and you end up on an enemy ship, and the military is like, hey, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm finishing the fight. And then the game just cuts, and it ends, and I'm like, but John, the fight is not over.
Yeah.
I like it because of how much better it is than Halo 1 and because they improved a lot of the shit that they should have. Is it perfect? No. But lovable.
It definitely has its charm.
Yeah.
I do like playing in the Master Chief Collection because you could hit the select button and look how ass everything looks from the past.
Yeah, that's an important note because yeah. I did the remaster and I definitely recommend playing the more updated versions.
The updated version looks really good.
They look great.
Yeah.
Huge fan.
I like Halo 2.
Okay.
Maybe I like Halo 2 so much because of how burned out I was after Halo 1.
I mean, I think that's part of it, but it definitely did what it needed to as a sequel.
Oh, for sure. And, like, Halo 2 just felt like a game. To modern standards, at least.
So, my first Halo was Halo 3, actually.
Mine was Reach.
Oh my god, what a fucking start.
I was so confused, like, oh my god, they're gonna go to Earth next.
The first console I had was the Wii, which I loved it at the time, but it became very apparent that the graphics were never gonna get better, and that it was also just kind of burning out really slowly.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I gotta get an Xbox and play, like, actual games. But when I got the Xbox, I was, like, coming into it late. And I'm like, I've missed all these games, and I need to catch up. So I was like, I'm just gonna play the third part of all these big franchises.
Jesus Christ.
I'm like, I'm gonna play Mass Effect 3, I'm gonna play Gears of War 3, I'm gonna play Halo 3. Obviously, I went
Mass
back...
Mass Effect 3!
Obviously, I went back to play all of Mass Effect and all of Halo, which I love. And Gears of War, you couldn't pay me. To go
yeah,
through
who
that.
Gives a shit about Gears?
Halo 3 is really, really good. Like, impossibly good. Just like a fucking... The pacing is so insane because it just does not stop. Like, you'll be in a briefing and they're like, this is our plan. And then immediately the military outpost gets attacked. Or you'll be like, okay, we finally broken through the blockade and we can escape to hunt the Covenant. And then the Flood hit Earth and infect everybody. And it's absolute hell, because everything's already on fire from the battle that you were trying to do, and the Covenant and the Marines are all getting mutated. It's good.
It's good. And then they're like, oh, there's a Forerunner structure in the Earth that will take you to a bigger Halo thing.
That will take you to a crazy fucking desert where you can have, like, the best tank level in maybe
it's
game
really
history.
Good.
It is good.
It's really good. You know, there's this, like, an actual honest-to-God scarab fight, which is... great, because you see a scarab in Halo 2 and it just kind of shoots at you. It's a big old tank bug and it just shoots at you and you climb in it and you kill it.
Mm-hmm.
But in Halo 3 you actually have to, like, fly a plane around and shoot at it, and it's great. I think there's you have to take down several. It's so good. Yeah, Halo 3 is great. Kind of also ends on a cliff note, but in a way that satisfies.
But in a way that makes sense, not in a way that is infuriating.
No, and it leaves the window open for, like, new adventures.
I really appreciate the way the stakes were risen in Halo 3, not just with fighting the Covenant, but also in terms of the Flood actually being, like, an insane threat, because the library was terrifying and possibly irritating.
But localized, you know?
It was just you hanging out, and then in Halo 2 they attack, but it's kind of limited to, like, fringe research stations. But Halo 3 really makes you realize just how large and terrifying the war is that you're fighting against the Covenant and the Flood. Not all of the Covenant, because a lot of the Covenant are like, oops, sorry. Thanks to our friend the Arbiter, they're like, we should maybe stop the Flood, guys. And we're like, I know! But it really elevates everything from character to settings to story in a way that, like, a third act and a trilogy really should, and I respect that. But also fun as hell.
Exactly. It's kind of crazy. Like, when did that game come out?
Oh, Halo 3 was 2007.
7 years is a pretty long time for things to change. But, like, nowadays, 7 years is, like, a development cycle. But, like, for three games to come out in 7 years, and for them to feel drastically different from one another in terms of, like, quality, pretty nuts.
Yeah.
It's pretty nuts. Good on you, Halo 3, for being
Halo 3
my third favorite game in the series. It's a fun time, though. Except for that Hive level. Hive? Whoa. Sorry, Destiny. It's Flood. The Flood level. What's it called? Is it High Charity? It's called Cortana.
Yeah, because you have to save Cortana.
Yeah, that mission, Cortana, is brutal.
You just gotta find the energy sword, and you're fine, because it's hiding.
Mine's just getting lost in there, because all those doors look like little booty holes.
But also there's this, like, giant monsters.
Oh, there's so many giant monsters, and they, like, spit.
Okay, well, I will say one thing about at you. Cortana, which is probably, like, one of the more difficult levels, is that once you save Cortana and you're trying to get out and you're swarmed, the Arbiter shows up. He shows up and is just fucking destroying the Flood. And you're like, I love this guy.
Here's the thing about if you are playing the campaign by yourself. The Arbiter is always with you, except for, like, a good portion of Cortana, and he cannot die. So he's just going ham on every living thing, and it's great.
It's canon, baby.
It's canon. Arbiter cannot die. So, especially on the higher difficulties, if you're having a hard time, you just fall back, and he will wreck shop. It's pretty great.
Keep calm and trust the Arbiter, guys. Mm-hmm.
But then I do like when you're playing with two people. One person is the Arbiter and one is Master Chief. So I think that's kind of pretty
cool. That's cool. But yeah, Halo 3 is good.
Halo 3 is good.
People die, obviously. I mean, thousands and thousands of people die. But also, like, Johnson and Keyes die.
Yeah, Miranda Keyes. Her father, Captain Keyes, dies in Halo 1 horrifically. What, Johnson?
Yes.
Yeah. Johnson is also Master Chief's best friend. Master Chief has a lot of friends, oddly enough, for a man who's maybe says like 12 words each game, which is finish the fight. See, that was a really good one.
I like
Thank
that
you.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, he has a lot of friends and most of them die pretty horrifically,
or are forgotten about,
and then don't show up in the game that you want them to be in.
Is that it for Halo 3 before we get to...
We should probably talk about ODST.
For a second, I thought we had to go right to 4, and I was like, oh, please, no. But no, we get to go to ODST and Reach, which are both
Hell
good places.
Fucking yeah.
Fuck yeah. All right, so Halo 3, ODST, 2009. You'll be surprised at how satisfying watching a jellyfish light a cigarette can be.
It's a great game. So you play as not a Spartan. We didn't even say what a Spartan was.
Look, if you're listening to this, you already know what Halo is. And if you don't, then this is a wild time to learn. Spartans are genetically modified super soldiers that were kind of abducted as children and then fucked with as they grew up for a long time so they could become impossible juggernauts of destruction in order to save humanity from, at the time, farmers, which is rough.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Aliens showed up conveniently, so I guess everything they did to those kids is fine. Weird message, but okay.
I guess so. Most of them are dead, but you know.
Most of them are dead because of the wars. Anyway, ODST is different from other games in the series because you are just playing kind of as a regular soldier.
Dude.
What is it? Orbital Drop Shock Trooper? Is that it?
Yeah.
And, like, in this game, your health doesn't regenerate. The fighting feels way more frantic. And, yeah, there are times when, you get a really cool weapon or you get, a tank and you can still just tear through a bunch of enemies. But the tension is, way higher and, the strategizing is totally different because you're like, oh, I can't just kill everybody immediately.
Definitely the moments, the vehicle sections where you're given a scorpion and you're like, go fucking ham on these monsters. It definitely feels like a really quick reprieve from being so squishy and vulnerable. You know, you're like, I'm in this, and then the minute you have to leave it, you're like, no, please, I don't want to go back out there. They're mean to me out there. Yeah, your character is unnamed. His name is the Rookie. Yeah, so the Rookie gets knocked out during his drop. And he wakes up 12 hours or something like that after the rest of his team has kind of gotten out and done cool war things. So he has to kind of pick up the pieces and find out where his team is. And you explore New Mombasa in kind of a non-linear structure where you can kind of go to whatever mission you want and kind of check out things however you come across them, which is really interesting. And definitely a departure from the very linear structure of the past games. But you have, oh god, what's his name? Who plays Buck?
Nathan Fillion.
Nathan Fillion's in it. It's great. He's good, as in everything.
Yeah, unlike Halo 2, which the dual perspectives were maybe a little clunky and didn't quite add to the story in the way that they wanted to. Mm-hmm. This game kind of jumps between two timelines. You being in the future, kind of lonely and exploring the city, and you don't know if your friends are still alive. And then in the past, where it shows all the other squad mates as they, got out of the pod and then were trying to survive these aliens during the beginning of the war. And it is really good. You uncovering more of the mystery, and you get all these different mechanics and meet all these new characters. And the settings are kind of cool because when you're in the future, you can see a building burn. And then when you jump back, you can see what happened.
Yeah, and more likely than not, you caused it to get on fire.
Yeah.
It's great. It is, dare I say, one of my favorite Halo games, if not my favorite Halo game. The story is fantastic. The stakes feel real, even though you know that, humans survived, but you don't know about, these people, you know? The music. Oh my god, Shane!
The music is really good.
The music!
Music's always been good. That's not a new thing. We have to, you know, but in this game, it's this kind of weird, almost smooth jazz. I don't know how to describe it, but it's just really good. It's just really good.
The main theme is, this lone trumpet, and it's so good. It's so good. It's really good. Or it's a saxophone or something. It's just, fucking rad. I think that was I bought that soundtrack in high school, and I would just listen to it on the bus on the way home from school, just with my headphones and be like, hell yeah, ODST music. So good. And also it introduced a new multiplayer mode called Firefight, which I think is a really, really, really fun game type that they just don't want to keep doing. I think Firefight's just in ODST and Reach. I think that's it. But it's really cool because it's you and three of your buddies against ever-increasing odds of aliens. And it's a good time.
Even though the game is pretty much set in one location or one city, they do a really good job of varying it. Mm-hmm. And also showing various stages of it being on fire and invaded. Part of that's because of the dual perspectives, but also because, you're in a police station, or you're driving through a zoo that's on fire and full of aliens, or you're going down a highway as a giant spaceship just absolutely glasses the city you're in, which mm-hmm. is horrifying and mm-hmm. stressful. And then also you have to go underground, which is another barrel of stress.
Oh, full of bugs. Because
there's so many bugs. It's so scary. It just does a really good job, I think, of making the place that you are playing the game in exciting and dynamic and interesting. And even though, spoiler alert for Halo ODST, which came out in 2009, everyone actually lives. But the game does a good job of making you feel like they won't, like, so many people sustain horrific injuries throughout the game, and also while you're wandering through the streets, part of you is like, is everyone just dead? And I'm alone.
There's one point where this guy just gets an axe through his chest, and you're like, he's dead. But then he doesn't die, but, like, you know, almost nearly.
I think that's during that rooftop fight, which is also fucking insane. And then the last stand, which I think you're in, like, a government building or something, is just insane.
Oh my god, yeah.
A lot of good fights in this one.
God, what a memorable game.
Honestly,
like,
yeah.
There's a lot of things that I remember from the first couple Halos, but only because, like, the library is burned into my goddamn skull because of how just brutal it is.
Yeah.
But just very fond memories of ODST. And just, like, it's very atmospheric, which is almost a first for the series.
Yeah, because it's just so, I guess, sure of itself. That's not anything.
No, it is. It feels very confident.
Yeah.
Almost like a neo-noir-esque package with, like, a war movie slapped on top of it.
Yeah.
It's very good. Now, Shane, should we talk about your favorite?
Yay! Halo 5. I'm kidding. Halo Reach, 2010.
Yes.
Halo Reach is a game you can't win, but you should really play. It is so brutal and intense and fun, and much like ODST, the setting changes as you play the game in really cool and dynamic ways. I've said the word dynamic too many times, but it's really good. You are playing as a member of Noble Team, and you're facing this fucking insanely massive Covenant fleet that has invaded. It's the very beginning of the war. Humanity, like, we have protocols in place for alien invasions, you know?
Yeah.
So when we first fight the elites in fucking farmland, that's another nutty thing about this game.
Yeah.
Is that it begins and you're like these giant rolling green hills and it's full of like weird alpaca alien
birds.
Cow things.
Yeah.
And you're like, cool, great, we're hanging with the farmers. And then you show up at this research station and people are getting gutted by elites. Like these laser swords are just cutting people in half and you're like, uh-oh.
Oh, spooky.
The UNSC is like, okay, winter protocol time, everybody. We're going to be ready for this. We're going to hold them off. And then a billion ships show up and you're not ready for it.
I love how it's like winter protocol. It's going to be good. Or no, winter contingency.
Winter contingency. It's even cooler than what I said. Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, we know what's up. And then immediately the next level is like the forward military operating base is getting sacked and you're like, ah, shit.
Uh-oh, we're not ready.
Uh-oh.
One of my favorite things, we'll talk about all the characters who die tragically in a second.
Yes.
But one of my favorite things about Halo Reach is how you get to watch a planet fall in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, you start the game in this farmland and everything's very serene and you're like, how could there be a war here? But before you know it, you're fighting on the rooftop of a hospital trying to, like, save civilians as everything's burning and these ships are rolling by trying to shoot you out of the air. And it's incredibly stressful. And then you're, like, racing across a battlefield that's also on fire, and there are thousands of aliens. And there's just no hope of winning, and then one of your friends sacrifices himself to blow up a giant ship, but then 80 more giant ships show up,
and a bigger ship shows up, and you're like, fuck.
It does a really good job, I think, of telling a story through the setting and showing how ravaged and horrifying Reach becomes because of the war.
It's a good game. So, I might be a little biased because I started with Reach, right? When I first booted up a Halo. Actually, that was the first video game I ever played on 360. It's terrifying. Like, yeah. I honestly think this is the first time in the series where the Covenant is, like, legitimately terrifying.
Yeah, because, you know, playing as Master Chief, a man who could kill God.
It kind of has.
Yeah, you feel very powerful and strong, and the Covenant is fun to fight and cool, but they never feel, like, that challenging or scary. But this game makes them terrifying because you see how they, like, kill people and destroy the planet, and people don't know how to react to that. So it's upsetting.
Oh, my God, yeah. And then, so, you know how we were like, oh, ODST's great because, you know, it's a cast of colorful characters that you know to, you know, love throughout the game, and they all live. Similar thing with Reach, except they all don't live. They all aggressively die in the, like, the worst ways possible. One gets shot in the head by, like, a sniper, just running, you know? Another sacrifices himself to crash into a scarab and disable it. Another just gets, like, dogpiled by a bunch of elites and stabbed. George blows himself up.
Yeah, to take out the enemy blockade. It's
brutal.
Fucking Reach, man. You know?
No, it's good. It's at times it feels like a slow burn, and then it just kicks you in the head.
Yep.
With burn.
So obviously it was released after, you know, the Halo trilogy and ODST, but it still felt like the first game. And I don't mean that in the sense that you know the Covenant already, but when they first show up, it's still terrifying. And you know that Reach falls because of the lore and the background, but it's still tragic and fresh. Like, yeah. The game does a really good job of reintroducing things in a way that make them feel more terrifying than they've ever been before.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
It's real good. Music's great, too.
Yeah, music's real good.
Yeah. I feel like I had one more thing to say. So, yeah, Halo Reach is the last Halo game to be developed by Bungie. Bungie parted ways with Microsoft at the end of the game, or at the end of the development cycle, and said, "Oh, we're gonna do our own thing." Halo is now safely in the hands of Microsoft first party developer 343 Industries. We have full confidence in them. They're gonna do great. Bungie then went on to partner with Activision to make Destiny 1, and now they are owned by Sony, which is such a wild string of events.
A fun ride for them.
Yeah. Should we get on to the dark times, Shane?
Halo 4 from 2012.
Dark year.
The fight is finished, but Halo 4 is here anyway. We talked about the ending of Halo 3. Because ODST and Reach were kind of prequels, sidequels, the ending of Halo 3 was open-ended in that after defeating the bad Covenant and the Flood, Master Chief was left floating through empty space. You know, but there was hope. I don't think there was anyone that thought, oh, they'll probably just leave it.
Yeah, the series makes too much money. They can't just end it here.
Well, like, it's also kind of a downer note to be like, and then we lost him. I fully support the idea of Halo continuing, but I don't support the way they did it. So Master Chief wakes up, and you're fighting some Covenant factions, and then there's a giant, mysterious Forerunner planet, and you're like, that's weird, and then you crash on that, because Master Chief's probably greatest talent is crashing onto stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we crash on this planet, and guess what? There's a new threat, and it's the Prometheans, and they suck. I mean that in every way. I don't mean, like, they're mean. I mean that they just kind of look generic, and fighting them is just the most irritating thing.
Yeah, they're these, like, metallic black and orange robots that some are dogs, some are these little floaty things, and then some are kind of like these bugs.
Yeah.
Like big old beetles.
Yeah, and then the drones, and then the knights or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's the Didact, which is like this warlord guy who's like, fucking.
I'll take over from here. So the Didact is a Forerunner, and we finally get to see what a Forerunner looks like.
Boring.
And it's not good. It's pretty gross, not gonna lie. And he hates humans because there's the mantle of responsibility. And it's this whole thing. Go for it. Please talk about this Transformers sounding shit.
The lore in Halo 4 is terrible because it undermines everything else and also is terrible by itself. You find out through some really gross looking comic book panel cutscenes that humanity actually was alive in the past and was a super advanced interstellar civilization, and we fought the Flood, and that wasn't going good, so then we decided to fight the Forerunners, and the Forerunners beat us and then took all of our technology and destroyed our empire, and then they got eaten by the Flood, and then they nuked the entire universe with the Halo rings, and then life started again, because, of course, it's so stupid, because...
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
It undermines... The fight with the Covenant, like, established in Reach and ODST, was not always, a foregone win for us. It was like, this is our first war in space, and we have to do everything we can to win, and then the Flood's here also, and it's scary. And the whole underdog element of humanity, and even of Master Chief, even though he's a fucking god of war. it's the idea that we were also alive a billion years ago. It's very eternal.
Very goofy.
It's just stupid. I wish I could say it in a more poetic way, but it's just dumb, and it undermines everything because we're no longer the underdogs. We were also warlords in the past. And why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Something even dumber, though, I think, is that the Prometheans are people.
Huh? Oh, yeah, sorry.
Don't give me that, huh?
Yeah, so the Didact has this ship that's called the Constructor?
The Composer.
Composer? Whatever. The Composer. And what it does is, like, atomizes people and turns them into robots, which I think is real dumb.
It's because
you can just make robots.
You can just make robots. In the lore, I watched the cutscene today to try to fucking unscramble the bullshit.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, the goal was to make, like, your brain a computer so you could, like, upload it and then re-download it. But when they did that, it caused things to go insane. So that's why the Prometheans just scream a lot. But the Didact was like, okay, well, that didn't work. So let's just keep doing it. That's why they put him in prison.
You know what? That's the one good thing the Forerunners ever did.
Yeah, because...
I mean, he gets out, but, like, you know...
He gets out real easy, but it's fine.
We press a button and he gets out.
It's just such a weird game, because there are some things that work. I think combat's, like, fairly decent. I think some of the Promethean guns are okay,
mm-hmm.
you know?
It introduces Spartan Ops, which is a... kind of like, I guess, the end game... after you beat the campaign, there's like a, I think like 24 to 30 levels you can play, of part of, you know, a team of Spartans, and you go and you kind of revisit previous areas that, you know, you were going through as Master Chief. But there's new objectives and new enemies, and, you know, it kind of just adds more time you could be playing the game, but the campaign's rough. It's really easy too. Like, it feels...
Most of it is, yeah.
Is there, like, a bad level?
No, there's one good level in this game, actually.
Which is?
I wrote it down somewhere. Mission 7, which is called Composer, it's where you're trying to, like... You're trying to destroy the evil Forerunner superweapon before the bad guys get it. And you're on this asteroid, mining station. And the thing that makes it the best level in the game is that you're fighting the Covenant. Who are fun to fight, and not the fucking Prometheans, which suck. So you're fighting the Covenant in this crazy installation that's part human metal and also part, like, asteroid rock.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you're trying to turn on, like, force fields, and you're trying to fight all these enemy ships, and you're, like, doing all this crazy shit. And it's good because it feels like Halo.
Yeah.
It's fun. And you're like, wow, I wish the whole game was this, but it's not.
Oh, and then that's also when they introduce the Mantis. Which is like this mech that shoots missiles and can stomp on people. It's great. Yeah.
Also, Latsky, is that his name?
Uh-huh, Latsky.
Latsky shows up. He's the one character in Halo 4. He's the one character in Halo 4 because he's nice to you. It does not make any sense. This is for Halo 4 and 5. I'm talking too much. But it doesn't make any sense that people are mean to Master Chief after everything he's done. It just defies reason. It defies reason.
In the first three games, he single-handedly, I mean with the Arbiter, but like he single-handedly
saves everyone.
Saves the entire universe. Because if they activate the Halo rings, the whole galaxy gets destroyed. That's what they don't talk about, you know?
You can't go over here, John, or you can't talk to that, or you can't hang out with Cortana anymore.
You need clearance.
Like, just fucking chill out, man. It's goddamn Master Chief. He's been saving people forever, so stop it.
We also need to talk about probably the worst part of Halo 4, which is Cortana having rampancy. She's going nutso. Like, AIs apparently have a shelf life. And
like
she's
5 years?
5 years. And she's like, and I'm 7. And I'm like, uh-oh. She's going a little crazy. And I think she accidentally kills people at one point or something. Or lets people get atomized by the Composer or whatever.
It's a whole thing. I understand maybe what they're going for. And it's not necessarily a bat. I don't know. It's just weird, right? It's just
I mean, I don't think it's bad either, but I think it's presented really poorly.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
You get to the end of the game, and there's a flight level.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. There is a flight level.
Sorry. This is
And it's on rails, too. You have to, like...
There's a level where you're in a little jet, and it's... Yeah, like you said, it's on the rails. You have to go in a very specific path through this giant Forerunner structure, which is just honestly a bunch of pylons. And if you mess up a second...
You immediately blow up.
The checkpoints are not super forgiving.
And
it's not fun.
There's a flight level in Reach, but it's so good, and it handles so well.
I forgot that Reach had that, and it's awesome.
It's really good. It's really good, isn't it?
But then once you do that, the Composer thing is getting close to Earth, too close to Earth. Earth, you gotta have something, man. Put a gun on the moon, fucking for Christ's sake. The composer is here, and John's inside the ship, and Cortana is like, okay, if I split my personality a billion times, I can fuck up the didact, and we can save the day, but this is probably gonna kill me. And it's tragic, but you're like, okay, at least we can make something of this rampancy thing. At least you can go out on your own terms, and you can help save the world. And she does that. And then you're punching the didact.
You hold him down and you punch him a bunch. So Cortana like holds him. You punch him a bunch. And then you throw a grenade and it like gets stuck in his collar and it blows up. And then he like kind of trips and falls into like the composer. Right? And he like gets like atomized.
And then there's a nuclear bomb also. And you just punch that and it blows up. You're fine. Whatever.
No, you're good.
And then we save the day and the world.
And then it's like, credits.
I wanted this to be a joyous podcast, but also I'm so mad.
It'll be joyous because we're going to talk about Infinite soon.
That's true. We get to end on a good note. So that, yes. All
right. So we have to do it. We have to do it now. We have to talk about Halo 5 Guardians.
Halo 5 Guardians.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. I don't want to do a play-by-play of this. It is rough.
This game also undermines a lot of goodwill by making Cortana a bad guy for some
reason. A genocidal maniac, yeah.
A genocidal maniac sort of out of nowhere, even though she died already. Also, we got the dual perspectives are back, and oh boy, does it not work, and it's not really fun. Mm-hmm. Even though Buck is back, they remembered somebody for the first time in recorded history.
God, Buck's so good. I love Buck.
Buck's great. We love Buck, one of our favorite characters. But he's part of...
He's a Spartan now. He's a part of a... Spartan Locke's team. Locke's a Spartan who is tasked with bringing in Master Chief, who is on the lam, I guess, because he's gone AWOL or whatever. It leads us all over the place to like a mining city. It's like kind of a mud huts. You find the elite homeworld and you kind of fight in their civil war, which is. You know, it's pretty fine.
It's like the Battle of Sunion or something.
Oh, Sanghelios. Okay. I fucking hate that I know that off the top of my head.
Oh my god, it's the only part of the game, much like in Halo 4, it's the only part of the game that feels like a game. Because you land on this giant bridge in this huge alien city, and it's like, take out the anti-air cannons, and then these huge ringed cannons manned by a whole bunch of aliens. And you have to go in there, and you're fighting, and you're tussling, and it's like, this feels good. Because for the first time in this game, there's like a clear objective that makes sense, and you can see that you're actually affecting something. Because for the rest of the game, you're fighting those stupid-ass fucking Promethean dogs, and I hate them, and they look stupid. And then the Warden Eternal is like, what if a Promethean was 40 feet tall, and he yelled at you all the time? Stupid. Dude,
and also, super hard to kill. Like, ridiculous. They can just one-shot you. It's not fun.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's like four at a time. It takes a lot of leaps. All of which are bad. And right as the game starts to get going and things are happening, right at the very end, it ends. It ends.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Specifically, not to spend too much time on this, but Cortana, who is evil now for some reason. For no reason, it's dumb. It undermines everything that we did to save her and the connection that we have with her in the other
games. She's like, robot superiority.
So she raises this army of Guardians, which are these giant Forerunner super weapons. What do they do? We never really find out.
I think like EMP stuff, and they shoot lasers.
Yeah, it's the giant, huge robot guys. And you might be like, why didn't the Forerunners use these against the Flood? And the answer is because they hadn't written them yet. So she raises this giant army of Guardians. The whole game you play is Master Chief trying to find Cortana, because surely this is some big mistake. It's not, because the game sucks. And this war against AI is about to start, and it's like, this is terrible, what's gonna happen? And the game ends, and you're like, I wish I hadn't.
Because I would say the last, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour, when you're doing, like, the Sanghelios Civil War, and, you know, you're, like, within, like, the Promethean, like, network, trying to get to Cortana, I think those are fine. I think they're fine. And then things start to happen, and then it ends. And so, like, I feel like you could trim a lot of fat off that campaign.
Yeah, or just not make that game.
You got me there. And then also, more egregious, even, on the multiplayer side, you used to be able to just have every gun if you wanted to. You know, I mean, you get two, but you know, you get a when you make a loadout for multiplayer, you just pick whatever gun you want. Who gives a shit, right? In this, you had to like get perk points and unlock cards that had guns, and like if you used up all the like the BR or whatever cards that you had, then you were shit out of luck until you got more cards. It was very egregious, very microtransaction-y. And, like, I would like to say games have gone past that, but I will talk about the state of the online of Infinite when we get to it. But it just really kind of fucked with the core gameplay loop of the online section of the game, which I think really killed any steam, because it plays pretty well. Like, it feels good. It's a decent shooter, you know? But it gets in its own way and ruins its own fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Halo Infinite 2021, a surprisingly wonderful game. But I think the best thing about this game is that it's not Halo 6, it's Halo 7. They jump so far ahead, like an entire game's worth of content, not a good game, but a game's worth of content happens between 5 and Infinite.
Yeah.
Like, there's a war against AI, and Sydney, Australia is destroyed, apparently, and everyone's over here, and Cortana dies, but the Banished is here, and one of our ships explodes, and it's like, what the fuck? But we jump all the way ahead to Master Chief floating in space again, as he does.
He just loves to do that.
Loves to float, and then you meet a lovable pilot, Echo 216, or Fernando, who saves your life, and is like, okay, let's leave. And Master Chief is like, but we gotta fight the war. And he's like, fine. And then you go to Zeta Halo, which is a fucking rad place to be.
Yeah. It feels almost like a love letter to the original trilogies, in terms of just, you know, general tone. But gameplay-wise, it is drastically different. It's a game. It's a real human game. Made in the year 2021. You know, it's good. You have a bunch of different power-ups that you can choose whenever you want.
But one of them.
One of them's the best. One's a grapple hook that you can use to grab weapons off, like, you know, the ground, or like you grab explosive barrels and throw them at people, or you can just hook on to enemies and just rush towards them, or you could just Spider-Man your way and like hook yourself up on like rooftops and buildings and like cliffs. It's so good.
It's so much fun clean. Fighting a boss and just kind of like swinging over his head, shooting him, and then he charges at you, and then swinging again, and then shooting him. That's all you have to do. And it's mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. Movement is so fluid. And one of the things in Halo in the past is that you were super slow, or that like walking around was kind of clunky.
Yeah, there was no run button for like 3 games.
But in this game, like, movement is so easy and like great.
There's a slide.
There's a slide. It's so good. It's just so smooth. It just feels great to play.
Yeah, it's good. You get introduced to a new faction of enemies. They're also aliens, but led more by Brutes, which are the Gorilla Boys.
Yeah, they also painted their ships red. Mm-hmm. So different.
And they make spooky sounds when they appear out of nowhere.
They make a horrifying horn noise, which haunts me even now.
It almost sounds like a Reaper sound from Mass Effect, almost. Yeah, so they're the Banished, led by Atriox and then Escherum. It's cool. Things feel personal, oddly enough, and there's a lot of interaction between kind of Master Chief and the different lieutenants of Escherum, and like things feel at stake, you know, like humanity has lost. That is very clear. And it's not even just about winning. It's just about survival at a certain point.
It's just about getting a foothold, you know?
Yeah. And it's good. It's real good. I was seeing an article that was saying that the story-wise for Infinite, it leaves a little bit desired because there aren't as many, like, big set pieces as, you know, the Scarab fight from Halo 3 or New Alexandria from Reach or something like that, right? But I think you don't really need these big set piece, like, blockbuster moments when every fight can be super creative with the way you interact with the world and the way that gameplay is just really fluid. I think that more than makes up for it. If anything, I kind of prefer it that way. because you can be more creative. And, you know, like, sometimes I would die and be like, okay, well, what can I do differently instead of, like, just running in, you know? And, like, boss battles are hard. And things are hard in this game. And it's a lot of, like, trial and error. How many times did you have to fight Escherum? Because
two or three times. It wasn't, you know, you swing and you're fine. You just gotta swing.
I had to fight him like 15 times. That was brutal.
Oh, Escherum, you son of a bitch.
It was hard. I kept running out of ammo in the room.
Uh-huh.
You're in like a really tight space and Escherum has this big old hammer and he's swinging it and he's hitting you and he's killing you. He can very easily one-shot you if you're not smart enough. But
one good thing about this game is that even when it feels hard, it's not infuriating.
No.
You know, it's not a library per se.
It is not.
Because you know deep down, and a lot of that's because the mechanics are so fucking smooth, you're like, I know I can do this. I gotta swing over here. I gotta get this new weapon.
Like, it was challenging, but because the game was good. You know what I mean? Not because it was unfair. And that part where you're doing, like, kind of like the gauntlets before you get to Escherum. And he's like, prepare yourself, Spartan. Get, like, guns if you want to. I'm like, don't give me these. I'm gonna win.
Oh, that one's fun. That was really fun. Like a huge alien training base where they had recreated human camps and weapons and areas so the aliens could train how to kill people, and then you have to fight in these areas against the Banished, and it's like really cool, and it's a really cool looking place.
It's really cool design. Really cool. So,
speaking of like setting, Zeta Halo itself is really good, and like you said, it's very reminiscent of the first Halo.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like all that good green stuff, you know, like the hills and the valleys. But you also have these crazy fucking Forerunner towers. The Banished have all these terrifying gun factories, and like their ships are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And also you see the giant ones in the sky, which are spooky, and sometimes they drop soldiers at you. Also spooky. Fun.
There's these little kind of like elite boss battles where, you know, there's a little dossier on this, like, you know, war criminal, and you're like, oh, I gotta go kill this guy and get his cool weapon. And it's kind of fun. It is like an open world-esque, very non-linear structure to the missions. You know, there are some linear aspects, like you start a mission and you're like, you can't leave the location until you finish. But there is this whole open world with like little towers, and it's dotted with activities that you can do. And I think that's really interesting, and it's really cool. And not that we as a people have moved past the need for linear games, but like, it's real nice to just kind of do whatever you want, kind of whenever you want to.
You can explore at your own pace, and that's really good and refreshing. And even like after you complete the game, you can still go around and take out a few of those enemies that you forgot about, and that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's just good to have control, you know?
It's really nice, yeah. And it's kind of like how they were giving the control to, you know, the player to how to figure out how to approach different, like, combat encounters. It was almost, you know, you were getting that same control with how you approach the narrative and mission structure, which, super neat. Really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
I will say, though, one thing.
Yeah.
With love, Halo Infinite, the Harbinger, or whatever the fuck that was about, was kind of not great.
Not needed.
Yeah, because the Harbinger was this new thing, and she really looked almost exactly like a Forerunner, but apparently this was a whole new alien. And she was like, well, my people, the Endless, were imprisoned in this thing, and we have to let them out. And I'm like, well, with a name like the Endless, that can't happen.
Nope.
But you fight her, because she's working with Escherum.
Mm-hmm.
She's working with Escherum, and they have like an alliance or whatever. But then you kill Escherum, and that's hard. And you kill the Harbinger, which actually is not hard at all. It's hard to kill the waves of people she sends after you, because one of them has a hammer, and that's difficult.
Dude,
but, like,
that guy sucks.
That guy is the worst. Killing a Harbinger was easy, because she just kind of floated around and teleported, and it was kind of like generic and like, what?
The one thing is, like, landing a hit on her is hard, but she is pretty squishy.
So that part was a little weird, you know what I mean? That's kind of felt like a bit of a relic of the old Forerunner Nightmare days.
But it also wasn't too much, you know?
This game feels so good to play that it doesn't matter that some of the story elements are kind of like weird or off-putting, or the fact that you don't see any of your friends. Where are they?
On a secret mission. Blue team's on a secret mission. Also, so is Spartan Locke. He's somewhere else.
So is Arbiter.
So is Arbiter.
And Latsky. And everyone's...
Latsky might be dead, honestly.
No, in the thing, in the audio clips, he said he was leaving the ship. So
yeah, and then it cuts off.
I gotta believe.
the multiplayer. Let me talk about that real quick. So, it came out first. The multiplayer is free on Xbox, just for anybody. And a PC, I think. So you don't need to buy the campaign to play the multiplayer, which is, like, good move, right? We love making games accessible to anyone that wants to play them. Unfortunately, not so good, because there is a cash shop, and every single cosmetic item is, like, locked behind, like, real human being money. So that's not great, that you have to pay money to make yourself, like, black and orange, when that was such a really easy thing to do in every game, was just change your color of your character. Not super jazzed on that. Luckily, it is just cosmetic. It isn't, like, gameplay elements, like, how 5 was like, oh, you have to get cards to get fucking guns. Ridiculous. But it's not ideal, and it is, hopefully they're trying to change it, but I understand they're trying to get money from people that are actively playing it instead of charging people for the game. I would have loved to be charged for the game in order to just get everything that I want, but I don't make the games, so I just have to complain about them online, you know.
I did some reading about what comes next, right? Would it be Halo 7? And apparently no, because instead they kind of want to make this not a forever game, but they kind of want to make it something that lasts a long time. Like, they said shit about it being like the next 10 years of Halo.
Interesting.
And how they want to increase the world. And I don't 100% know what that means, because we haven't really gotten any concrete details. I don't know if it's going to be like a DLC in a traditional sense, where it's like a series of missions, or if mm-hmm. it's going to be like world elements added over time. Like, they've talked about, okay, we'll add ray tracing to the game, or we'll add like cosmetic and graphical upgrades, and like mm-hmm. that's fine. But I'm curious to see if we'll actually get like a story thing, or over time we'll get like a game that is released in parts.
I mean, I'd be fine with that. Getting like, you know, every 6 to 12 months you get a little short 2-hour expansion. I'd be fine with that. Gives me a good excuse to pop back into the game.
One of my favorite things to do is to speculate endlessly.
Please.
So we're just going to talk about what we'd like from the future of Halo Infinite. What I would like, personally, is obviously some bigger changes to Zeta Halo. I think it's very open in terms of what could happen to the land. Like, obviously, shit could blow up, and scary Forerunner buildings could kind of disappear, because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd maybe like some new settings, maybe anywhere that's near the ring. That would be kind of cool. Installations, a moon, any, I don't know. I'd like the Arbiter to come back from vacation. That would be nice. I'd like to see Buck and Latsky again, please.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be cool to see the Covenant, or at least part of the Covenant, fight the Banished. Maybe get some help there. Because it's not like everyone doesn't exist. It's just that no one knows where we are.
Yep.
Because the UNSC has this fun habit of taking their biggest ships into random places, and then horrible things happen, and they're like, ah, oops. So I know we still exist, so I'd love to get some reinforcements. Not so much that the game feels impossible, but we have our foothold, I feel, because we've won a decently sized battle on Zeta Halo, so I feel like we could get a little more going in terms of supply lines.
Yeah.
What would you like to see?
What I would like to see would be I want Arbiter to come back.
Good.
I want to stay on Zeta Halo.
That's fine.
But I would like more diversity in biomes of Zeta Halo.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you remember, there was a trailer they did for, it was like showing off the new engine that they made for the game. And it came out a long time ago. And there was, like, a desert biome they were showing off. They were showing off, like, rain and weather effects.
Ooh, rain.
Which I think would be really cool. But, like, I think that would super change how I would, approach different
combat scenarios,
Yeah, if I knew, like, oh, maybe the rain masks, like, my footprints, and I can be more sneaky and stuff like that. Like, I think that'd be really cool to see them add that. Maybe that's a thing on next gen consoles or whatever, but I would like just kind of, you know, a little bit more visual upgrades on that front, and maybe more diversity in kind of locations where we can kill aliens and do cool things. I would love to see the Infinity come back to some capacity. Something that I think might happen instead of the Infinity, because, like, in-game, they're really coy about whether it's, like, destroyed or just gone or missing or whatever. They're like, we don't know where it is. Might be gone. Who knows? But the Spirit of Fire, which is the ship from Halo Wars 2, might make an appearance. I've been hearing rumblings about that.
Okay.
And maybe characters from Halo Wars 2 coming to, like, interact with Master Chief and Fernando, or whatever his name was.
His name's Fernando.
Hell yeah, it was Fernando. Just kind of, you know, expanding the universe, expanding the world a bit would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Halo is a storied series, which is now getting a TV show!
Yay!
Do you hear that on the wire? Oh my gosh.
You're gonna watch a city block get blown up by a jet.
There's a dog. There's a cool purple outfit.
And if you put it on, the world ends.
It doesn't make sense. Because
it's weird and in space, but on Earth, I don't know.
Who thought? Who would have thought? Not me.
Welcome to Newstown, everybody. We're gonna talk about the new Halo TV show trailer that came out recently. It's going to hit Paramount Plus on March 24th.
Sure.
Yes. We talked about the teaser and we didn't love it. There weren't any aliens in it, which is odd. But this new trailer is out and there are aliens in it.
So we were wrong a little bit. I said aliens in season 2.
You did. You made a bold prediction and that's fine. The aliens are here. We got all of them.
Well, we just saw elites, right?
We saw elites and we saw the worm boys. Can't forget.
Oh, that's right. You saw worm boys.
What are the worm boys called?
Hunters.
Hunters are here, everybody. So, the trailer makes it look a little bit better than what we saw earlier. The effects are okay. They're actual aliens. It's a little clunky. The costumes are not my favorite thing. No. More so the people. Master Chief looks fine. But the one time you see him fight, it's a little offbeat.
Real slow.
It's a little like, uh-oh, SpaghettiOs.
And not gonna lie, I feel like I've seen better produced costumes at, like, Comic-Cons and, like, you know, E3 and stuff like that. So, I don't know, it's weird. Like, there's people that are, like, hobbyists that have just made costumes that look maybe a little bit better.
I don't know. It's just such an odd tone. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not saying it's impossible to translate this into, like, a live-action thing, because Forward Unto Dawn, hello. But yeah. This, it's just peculiar.
It is peculiar.
There's apparently also a team of Spartans that are with the Master Chief in the show, which I would say makes sense.
Probably Blue Team.
Yeah, it makes sense from a story perspective, and we've had that in a limited capacity in the games. So there's some concepts in the show that seem interesting, I guess, but a lot of it just kind of feels stage proppy. I guess, and, like, these aren't really people who are really here. It's just, like, this is the show, and it's fake.
It's weird. It's
really weird. It's really weird. I don't know how to explain. It just feels so off-putting.
Well, also, you know, like, Master Chief.
Yeah, I know.
He never shows his face. He's just a big, big old guy in a big suit of green armor, right?
Yeah.
What's the one identifying thing besides his, like, physical appearance?
Is it the voice?
It's his voice. I don't know why they didn't get the voice actor for, like, from the games to just do the show.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird because it doesn't sound like Master Chief.
But do you think we'll see him, though?
Oh, 100% we'll see him.
Okay, episode 1.
They'll pull, like, the Halo Cardinal Sin, and it's just him taking his helmet off and goes, I'm Master Chief. it's interesting. I don't know how I feel about it. Probably not good. I think that's probably the takeaway, but I don't know. Like, it's I feel like it's, like, nearly there.
I also, you know? Yeah, it feels like an almost thing. I agree with you 100%. And look, everyone, I'd love to be wrong. That'd be great. But it does just kind of feel like a ghost.
It feels like someone wrote, like, you know how you write a paper at home and you turn it in, like, for homework when you were a student? Yeah, at home. Yeah, when you were a student. And then, like, but sometimes you wrote your paper on the bus on the way to school. That's how this show feels, you know? You're like, ooh, I could have done better. Honestly, I know this was on me. Yeah, who knows? Hopefully it'll be good. I would love to be wrong. That's the thing. I'd love to be wrong and be like, wow, this is the best. This is really good. But I don't think I am, you know? Should we do... Do you have more news?
Small bits of news.
Can I do the big news of the week?
Yeah, I guess.
So, Sony recently bought Bungie for a pretty hefty chunk of change. Bungie, the original developers of Halo, and the current developers of Destiny 2, which has a big old expansion coming in 2 weeks, which is pretty fucking sick. It's interesting because everyone thought that they would buy Bungie to make Destiny and future games console exclusive to the PlayStation. But it turns out that Destiny is staying a multi-console thing, and future Bungie games are also staying multi-console, which is super weird. So there's a lot of questions to why the acquisition was made, because you don't spend that much money to not have things exclusively on your console. And one thought is, since Destiny is like kind of the premier live service game that is out and playable right now, the hope is that they can kind of gain that technology from, you know, the back end of the game to create better live service models at Sony Studios. That's the thought, but it's kind of perplexing to me. But here we are, and they will not be taking away my crack cocaine, so that's pretty great.
Yeah, but there's also rumors about them trying to adapt it, Destiny that is, into something else, which I think would not work.
They've been talking about that for a while. They've been talking about doing a Destiny TV show, which I would say would work if they went, like, Arcane style and did, like, animation.
Yeah, and just, like, just went fucking weird as hell, and we're like, yeah, we're somehow gonna resurrect this thing despite the lore being super fractured.
Yeah, please do that. Don't do live action, because then we're gonna get Halo. So but yeah, so an interesting thing to be conscious of. What's your next thing?
Not much. There was a new Lightyear trailer that's coming out in June 17th. It looks fun.
Mm-hmm. It has a great cast.
You got robot cats, alien planets, surprising number of murderous robots.
I mean, one would be surprising to me because it's a children's movie, but, you know.
Yeah. Weirder, though, is the Godzilla TV show. The news broke a while ago, but we have more details on that now coming to Apple TV.
Wait, hold on. It's coming to Apple TV?
Yeah, Apple TV Plus or whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called. There's a Godzilla TV show, and you might be like, okay, fine. But the weird thing is that it takes place after Godzilla 1, but before all the other worst Godzillas.
Huh?
So that's weird, and they're like, it's about when people first discovered that monsters were around, and Monarch is here. Monarch being probably the least effective and least interesting government organization in cinematic history.
I'm not a fan of this.
I'm not a fan of this either. I'm worried it'll be like Invasion.
I was just about to say that.
It's going to be like the idea of monsters, but not like the interesting bits or cool experiences of monsters.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind like it being about first responders who have to deal with like monster aftermath or like the middle of a monster battle. That could be mildly interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But like overall, I don't know how this could work.
Or like those skydivers from the first Godzilla, you know?
You mean that one cool shot in that movie? Yeah.
Yeah. Just about them. Like, what are they up to? Like, but now.
A lot of them died.
Oh. Anyways, thank you for bearing with us. I know there's kind of a different format to our episode, a little weirder. If you're not a Halo fan, you are now, or you're more not, so you know. But thank you for bearing with us as we talk about something that we clearly very much enjoy and like. We love you. We appreciate you for taking time out of your busy day to listen to us. Shane,
yes,
if people want to talk to us about Halo or want to suggest Middle Watch, which is the section that we did not do in this episode, but that's fine.
Sorry, there was too much lore to go through.
Too much lore. Where can they talk to us? Where can they talk to us, Shane?
We're at Twitter and Instagram at Out of Dodge Pod. And also, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave a review and a comment because it helps us get noticed and we love hearing from you. Play Halo, I guess, but not the ones that aren't good.
Play current Halo. Play new Halo. We didn't say goodbye.
Did we?
No. Hey, thank you. Again, be safe.
Remember Reach, everybody.
Remember Reach! Also, save the Halo show, I guess. I don't know.
I think I have a few seconds of my cat purring from earlier.
That's nice.
I'm this, and I'm this, and welcome to our video.
We had a reptile.